Move that further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with. Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Monsignor James D. Habiger from the University of St. Thomas. A little tougher each year to get up those steps, huh?
You're right. Gracious, gift-giving God, we thank you for the gift of life. We thank you for the gift of this day and for this gathering of our senators. You remind us that we are godly people. We are made in your image and likeness. You promise us that you will be our God and we shall be your people. You share with us the vision of the kingdom and invite us to participate in its building by our legislative efforts. You promise to be close to us in all our endeavors. Your promise inspired Elizabeth Barrett Browning in this fashion. Earth's crammed with heaven, in every common bush afire with God, and only he who sees takes off his shoes. The rest sit around it and pluck blackberries. At this time, from now on, Lord, let us be shoeless. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Okay, be good. Left-handed. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of 5 members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file 802, a bill for an act relating to public safety, appropriating money for public safety, corrections, and other criminal justice agencies. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Representatives Paymar, Hillstrom, Liebling, Lesh, and Cornish. Senate file 802 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Reports of committees. There are 2 late bills on the reports of committees. They'll be referred to the Rules Committee. And a motion from Senator Pogemiller to
Mr. President, I move to lay the committee reports pertaining to appointments on the table.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. We'll go to introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are 3 printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. Did you want to recess now for the potluck?
Mr. President, I believe we'd recess now for the potluck, come back at 1 o'clock, and at 1 o'clock then we'll take up the We'll get the tax bill sent over to the House, and then we'll move to general orders. And there are two lists out. I believe number 19, Senate File 1124, Senator Dahl does not want to take that up today. Otherwise, I believe we could process. Oh, there's only one list, I guess. Two different pieces of paper. Looks like one list, so then we'll process those. So, Mr. President, recess to the call of the chair. That'll be 1 o'clock, members, and enjoy the potluck.
A motion to recess the call of the chair to 1 o'clock. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands in recess.
The roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I think we should process the omnibus tax bill. We need to put that onto the House file. Is Senator Bach with us? I saw him in the hallway, so he's close.
Are you okay, Murphy? All right. Senator Latz has messages from the House. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File 819, a bill for an act relating to commerce prohibiting certain unfair internet ticket sales by original sellers and resellers. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of three members be appointed thereon. Representatives Atkins, Lilly, and Zellers have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 819 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Latz.
I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 819 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Remaining under motions, Senator Pogemiller, do you wish to?
Mr. President, then I think let's try to process the House bill, the tax bill. I would move that House File 2323 be taken from the table.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 2323, that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 2323 its second and third reading and place it on its final passage.
Why don't give a brief explanation what we're doing. Senator Fischbach and others have kind of a look on their face, so why don't we...
Mr. President, this is the
tax bill.
We're taking the tax bill and putting it on the House file.
Okay. A roll call on the rule suspension? Do that right. On the motion to suspend the rules, there's been a roll call requested. Secretary will take the roll on that motion. All senators. Oh, does it? Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Anderson. Anybody excuse? All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. In 48 ayes and 17 nays, the motion prevails. Senator Bach, second reading.
House File 2323.
Second reading. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I move to amend House File 2023 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause, delete the title of House File 2323, and insert the language after the enacting clause in the title of Senate File 2074, the second engrossment.
Mr. President?
On the motion, Senator Hand.
Mr. President, would Senator Bach, could he give us a little bit of a description of the differences between these two bills before we vote?
Well, Senator Bach.
Mr. President, what I am doing is deleting the House language out of the House bill and putting the Senate language into the House file.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller. Excuse me. Third reading. It's my fault.
House File 2323, a bill for an act relating to the financing and operation of state and local government, making policy, technical, administration, and other taxes and tax-related provision changes.
Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I would move that the proceedings under the call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill. Senator. We want to comment before the vote. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I hope members will vote no on this bill. I can only imagine what's going to happen when we marry our tax bill, the colossal tax bill with the $2.2 billion in income taxes, to the crazy bill from the House that has $1.5 billion in new taxes, plus we're going to repeal the mortgage interest deduction, and we're going to raise taxes on alcohol and cigarettes. If if you could visualize it, I think what might come out might look like Frankenstein's monster with the bolts in the neck and the stitches across the top. Minnesotans, beware, because the monster tax bill is going to come out of the conference committee. And I sure hope that members here realize what they're voting for. They're voting for the marriage of one monster and another. These monsters should never be put together, believe me. Members, I'm going to remind you that the Senate version raises $2.2 billion in taxes. $1.4 billion of it come out of the lower two tiers of taxpayers. Members, folks that make $33,220 in income on an annual basis or less will have more taken out of their pockets. If you really wanted to know the truth, if you're listening, that tax bracket, 943,000 Minnesotans pay taxes only in that first tier. 943,000 filers pay only in that lower tier. I think that's a pretty big number. It's especially interesting when you look and see from our Health and Human Services bill how many people we have on our health care programs and how they compare. On our health care programs in 2009, we'll have 710,225 projected enrollees. Now, let's think about this for just a moment, members. If we're going to raise taxes on the lowest tier, those folks are now at risk. They're on the edge. What happens if one of them loses a job? What happens if they have an enforced furlough at work? What happens if somebody gets sick? What happens if their employer decides they can't afford the health insurance for them anymore? If you're thinking about this, we're going to throw them right over the edge and right into the safety net that we're trying to protect from cutting. We're going to put more people into the Health and Human Services need list than we can manage. It's the tax policy that's driving them over the edge. Please don't do this. We are creating a monster with this bill. And when it comes out after marriage with the monster from the House, I can only imagine the nightmare that Minnesotans are going to have. Please vote no.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, parliamentary inquiry. This feels like you're picking your poison. You know, you got the House bill, you got the Senate bill. The inquiry would be, do we have to vote on either one of these, or we have to, you know, can we maybe hit page or something like that? It's a dead serious question. Is there a requirement to vote on this one?
Well, I think we, well, we're under call. I suppose you should be voting. As far as I know, there's not a yellow button.
Mr. President, I'm wondering if I can vote two reds.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, Secretary, close the roll. There be at 35 ayes and 30 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, we'd like now process the Berglund bill. I think we need to read the message from the House first.
The Health and Human Services bill, I'm sorry.
Under motions, we'll revert the messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 1362, a bill for an act relating to state government. Signed, Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. Then first reading of House bills.
First reading of House bills.
House file 1362, a bill for an act relating to state government, establishing the Health and Human Services budget, making changes to licensing, Minnesota Family Investment Program, etc.
First reading. Senator Pogemiller, the urgency
motion. Mr. President, I move that the urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 1362, that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 1362 its second and third reading and place it on its final passage.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
House File 1362.
Second reading. Senator Berglund.
Mr. President, I move that House File 1362 be amended to delete everything after the enacting clause and delete the title and insert the language after the enacting clause and the title of Senate File 695, the second engrossment.
Okay, tell the body that what you're doing here.
We're substituting the bill we debated yesterday, the Senate version, and replacing that language with the House language.
Okay. Third reading. On the amendment, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Third reading.
House File 1362, a bill for an act relating to state government establishing the Health and Human Services budget, making changes to licensing, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Be it 40 ayes and 25 nays. The bill is passed. Its title agreed to.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, remaining on motions, I move that we take up the confirmation calendar.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. We have before the Senate confirmation calendar. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, we'll take up the non-controversial ones, and I think that starts with Senator Metzen, Bureau of Mediation Services, and then Board of Electricity. Then we'll have Senator Marty do Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, Senator Pappas, Minnesota Office of Higher Ed Director, Board of Trustees of the State Colleges, Higher Ed Facilities, and Higher Ed Facilities Authority. Apparently, there's several of those. And then finally, under
Energy and Utilities, Prettner Solon, would do two out of the three. She would process Mr. Boyd and Ms. Wergen. The third one, at this point, there's some members who view that as controversial, so I thought we'd just hold off on that one today. So I yield to Senator Metzen.
Senator Metzen.
I move that the report from the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs, reported March 9, 2009, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Bureau of Mediation Services, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Metzen.
President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Metzen.
President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs reported March 9, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, now consent to and confirm the appointment of the Bureau of Mediation Services Commissioner.
The name of Stephen G. Hoffmeyer?
Stephen G. Hoffmeyer, that is correct. Mr. Hoffmeyer is a graduate of Hamlin Law School, has a great deal of experience in the fields of mediation and arbitration. He began working for the Bureau in 2002. He served as Deputy Commissioner prior to this appointment. I believe he's well qualified, and I urge your support of his confirmation.
Discussion on the motion. Discussion. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion by Senator Metzen that the Senate, having been given its advice, do consent to and confirm the appointment of Stephen G. Hoffmeyer to the Bureau of Mediation Services as Commissioner. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the appointment is confirmed. Senator Metzen.
President, I move that the report from the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs reported March 9, 2009, pertaining to appointments to the Board of Electricity, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Metzen.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Metzen.
Mr. President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs, reported March 9, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment to the Board of Electricity, Mr. William M. Hoskins.
Discussion on the motion. Senator Metzen.
Mr. President, members, Mr. Hodson is serving one of the two master electricians' seats on the board. He's previously served at the State Board of Journeymen as a journeyman member. Mr. Hoskins owns Hoskins Electric in Caledonia, has over 20 years' experience in the industry, 16 of them as a master electrician. He is well qualified for this position.
Discussion on the motion. Discussion. Seeing none, Senator Metzen moves that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of William M. Hoskins to the Board of Electricity. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the appointment is confirmed. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I move that the report from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security reported March 30 be pertaining to appointments to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security on March 30th, Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Joseph Johnson III, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency.
Discussion on the motion. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, members, Mr. Johnson is a senior vice president at North Shore Bank in Duluth, and he's 32 years of banking experience. He's been serving on the Housing Finance Agency Board and encourages his reconfirmation.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, Senator Marty moves that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Joseph B. Johnson III to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The appointment is confirmed. Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, I move that the report from the Committee on Higher Education, reported April 22, 2009, pertaining to the appointment of the Director of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Higher Education, reported April 22, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of David R. Metzen. Mr. Chairman, this is when I talk about the candidate.
Yes. Discussion on the motion. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. David Metzen is from Sunfish Lake in Dakota County. He is a former school superintendent where he was known as being an innovator and a reformer. He's a former regent. He served on the Board of Regents, including as chairman, for 12 years. He's a great education leader and well-respected by both sides of the aisle. I strongly recommend, and so does the committee, his appointment.
Is there discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Senator Pappas renews her motion that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of David R. Metzen to the Minnesota Office of Higher Education as Director. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the appointment is confirmed. Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, I move that the report from the Committee on Higher Education, reported April 22, 2009, pertaining to appointments to the Minnesota Higher Facilities Authority, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
I move that the foregoing reports be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
I move that in accordance with the reports from the Committee on Higher Education, reported April 22, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Gary Benson, Mary Ives, and Raymond Vinzant.
And this is to the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority.
That's
on that
right.
Motion, Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, the Higher Education Facilities Authority, their responsibility is to authorize bonding construction projects for private colleges, and they're able to then get a lower interest rate. These three individuals have been serving on the board and have been doing an excellent job, and the committee recommends their reappointment.
Is there discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Senator Pappas renews her motion that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointments of Gary Benson, Mary Ives, and Raymond Vincent, Jr. to the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the appointments are confirmed. Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, I move that the report from the Committee on Higher Education, reported April 22, 2009, pertaining to appointments to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Higher Education, reported April 22, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of the following individuals to the Board of Trustees: Cheryl Dixon, Jacob England, Clarence Hightower, Allison Luneberg, Louise Sundin, Terry Thomas.
Discussion on the motion. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm personally familiar with most of these candidates. Cheryl Dixon is actually a former neighbor of mine, but more importantly, she was the former director of the Minnesota Humanities Center. She's been an outstanding board member, and we're very lucky to have her reappointed. Jacob Englund is one of the student appointees. Clarence Hightower has also been a very valuable member of the committee. He's the community leader, former president of the Minneapolis Urban League, and now heading up the Community Action Program in Ramsey County. Allison Luneberg is another one of the student appointees from the four-year colleges. Louise Sundin, we're very, very fortunate to have her appointment to the Board of Trustees. She is one of the finest labor leaders in the history of Minnesota. She's formerly with the City of Minneapolis, a teacher, and it's really important for us to have someone with K-12 background on the board and someone who is as much a reformer and an innovator as Ms. Sundin. Terry Thomas is another one of the student representatives from the two-year technical colleges. So I would urge their confirmation.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, Senator Pappas moves that the Senate, having given his advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointments of Cheryl Dixon, Jacob Englund, Clarence Hightower, Allison Luneberg, Louise Sundin, and Terry Thomas to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The appointments are confirmed. Senator Prettner-Solin.
Mr. President, I move that the report from the Committee on Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications reported April 23, 2009, pertaining to appointments to the Public Utilities Commission be taken from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Prettner-Solin.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Prettner-Solin.
I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications, reported April 23, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm to the Public Utilities Commission the appointment of David C. Boyd and Betsy Wergen.
Discussion on that motion, Senator Prettner-Solin.
Mr. Boyd has served on the PUC since July 2007. He has served as chair since July of 2008. Mr. Boyd's background is in higher education. He is very thoughtful in his work at the PUC, and I encourage you to support his confirmation today. And Ms. Wergen served with us in the Senate from 2003 to 2009. Before that, she served as commissioner for Sherburne County and as a small business owner. We've all had the opportunity to see her work ethic here at the Minnesota Senate, and I encourage you to support her confirmation here today.
Discussion on that motion, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President, members, and I too want to rise and support of Betsy Wergen. We all know Betsy for the most part, at least many of us, most of us in this body have served with Betsy, extremely capable woman. She's a studied person. If she studies the PUC packets like she studied her Senate packets, she'll know what's going on, and I would fully expect that. Betsy's fair, she listens. She certainly decides in a fair and balanced way, and I think Betsy represents an outstanding choice here in terms of a public utility commissioner. So I stand in pride and in great respect and certainly admiration for a wonderful person who will make a great public utilities commissioner, and I urge the body's support.
Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. President, I also briefly want to urge members with regards to the Wergen appointment. When she served in leadership in the Senate, I found her extremely thoughtful, easy to work with, always willing to consider all points of view, and as we all know, a good sense of humor and pleasurable to be around.
Further discussion on the motion. Seeing none, Senator Prettner-Solin moves that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointments of David C. Boyd and Betsy L. Wergen to the Public Utilities Commission. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, The motion prevails. The appointments are confirmed. Senator Pretner-Solon, you'll need to move to table the remaining appointment.
Mr. President, I move that the remaining appointment from the report of the Committee on Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications dated April 23, 2009 be tabled.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogomiller.
Mr. President, remaining on motions, I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the General Orders calendar.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The committee will come to order. Senator Pogomiller.
Mr. Chairman, there's a list on your desks for General Orders I'd like to designate, number 91, number 108. We will not do number 19, but we will do 99, 100, 83, and apparently, Senator Sparks, you do not want to do number 50, so we will not do number 50. And I'm trying to gather a few more bills to do here, so if you have one of interest, please step forward. And I just want to forewarn members who are, when we put them on here and you pull them off, there is going to be a moment where we say, enough is enough. I mean, so you need to kind of start to get ready with your general orders bills. I yield to Senator Rummel.
The committee has before us number 91 on general order, Senate File 247. Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File number 247 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, you may ask, what does this bill do? And the answer is simply, it protects babies. This is a very modest bill. It phases out BPA in bottles and baby bottles and sippy cups, and that's all it does. Over the early parts of the session and during interim, we went through extensive negotiations with all sorts of stakeholders, and so you will notice that the bill does not include toys. It does not include infant formula containers. It does not include cans or medical devices. As I said, it is a very limited bill. How does this bill protect babies? Well, as you know, babies develop very rapidly. And this development is controlled by genes that send messages in sequence. When those genes are disrupted by even very minute amounts of BPA, harm can result that may not show up for years. Let's go back over what BPA is. It's a hormone disruptor that acts like estrogen. In children, BPA has the potential to trigger a malfunction at the genetic level, creating unwanted action affecting neurological and reproductive development. In laboratory experiments, BPA has been associated with abnormalities of the male reproductive tract, early onset of puberty in girls, prostate and breast cancer, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and ADHD. So you may wonder, why should you support the bill? Our constituents want the confidence that the baby products in the stores are safe. Last summer, during the state fair, we took a poll, and those who responded to the poll, 78% of Minnesotans said they wanted to eliminate harmful chemicals from children's products. Some stores have already taken action, but the public still remains uncertain. There is no cost to this bill, and it will go a long way to creating public confidence. What's more, this bill has bipartisan support. It's been heard in joint health and environmental committees, in the health and housing and family security committee. It's passed in the business and industry committee. And in all these committees, it passed with bipartisan support. And what's more, the governor has told me he will sign the bill. So I urge your support, and I will stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would have a question for Senator Rummel, if she would answer.
She will yield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rummel, in one of the handouts that you distributed to the body, the thing off the internet from ABC News. It says panel rebukes FDA on plastic bottle safety. And reading through it near the bottom of the first page, it says the FDA has been planning to discuss the chemical at a meeting on Friday. What has the FDA concluded about bisphenol A?
Senator Rummel.
I'm sorry, I did not, I don't know.
Senator Hahn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we did hear testimony in Senator Marty's committee on this, and the testimony that we had was that the FDA has found that there is no harm to anyone from using this chemical in products, and I think, members, that we run the risk of sending a very bad message to the public that because we think that a product is unsafe, that it would be unsafe when it has proven, at least so far, to be completely safe. And so I think, members, we should oppose this, and I'm going to ask for a roll call vote. I think that we do have, and we've been talking about trying to find a way to for the legislature to evaluate claims about potential harm to the citizens of the state. In fact, I think we have in another bill a process already going through the system that would say we're going to have the university and other people take a look at claims and make some recommendations to the legislature before we take action. The experience that I've had in the committees is that we hear conflicting testimony. We hear from advocates for banning products like these, and they come and they say this is bad. Then you hear people from the other side that also are scientists, and they say, no, that's not true, and then we vote. And so we are substituting a political process for one that would require us to use some science and reason. And again, as far as I know, Minnesota would be the only state in the country that has taken the step of banning the use of this product, of this chemical in products, and I think that we should be very cautious about doing this, especially since there is no scientific evidence that would say that any harm to anyone has occurred because of use of this product. And so, members, I'm going to ask for your support on voting against this bill.
Senator Hahn, you said you were going to ask for a roll call vote. Did that mean you are asking for one?
Mr. Chairman, I would ask for a roll call vote.
Okay. Are there three hands for a roll call vote? Seeing three hands, there will be a roll call vote. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I, too, rise against this bill. Bisphenol A is an item that science has done more research on than almost any other item that comes in contact with humans. And although some of the research says it has the potential to cause harm, and that again, members, we tend to ban things today based on potential or experimental evidence. And we do need to be very cautious. As a member of the legislature that practices science nearly every day in my real work, there's a big difference in what you can do in a laboratory and the way chemicals react in real life or in nature. That is the whole basis for the discussion of global warming as well, whether something you can get to happen in a controlled experimental laboratory situation actually can occur in real life. And members, there is good reason that people are moving away from it. Marketing people know that if something potentially, like the science says, has the potential to do something, these things get phased out. We do a great job in the United States of protecting people just on the basis of potential harm. The market is moving there. We do not need to ban things. The market's doing the right job. It is correctly moving in directions on every bit of chemistry that we have any evidence that might have a potential harm. And we just get so ahead of ourselves some days in Minnesota. All legislators seem to think somehow that all the laws of physics and chemistry are just somehow banned at their state border and that everything works different here than anywhere else. If it was proven to be a problem, the federal government would have banned it a long time ago. We don't need to start at the state level here. We don't have the expertise here, and we don't need to create a different market in Minnesota than exists anywhere else in the country.
Further discussion, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd just like to say just a few things about the bill. I think Senator Rummel has worked very, very hard on this bill. She has put a lot of effort, and she has done this bill justice as far as communicating with all the parties and trying to understand the issues and dealing with those issues and coming to an agreement. So I thank you for that, Senator Rummel. I think you've done a wonderful job. I do have some concerns, and I did express those in Senator Metzen's committee. And number one is that we are not taking the overall approach that, say, Senator Scheid's bill takes. We are singling out one chemical. And that always concerns me because I guess I look at farther down the road, what are we going to do with some other chemicals? And it's always a great concern. Also that we're the first state to be banning this chemical, and that's we're always the first state in everything, it seems like. And also the information that is coming out from the FDA that that does not support the allegations. But you have worked with all the parties. You do have the industry sign off on this, and I do thank you for that, Senator Rummel.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, the question about the FDA, the International Consortium of Industry, Academic, and Government Scientists has rejected as incomplete and unreliable the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's case that the chemical found in the food containers and other household products are safe. This comes from the Journal of Interactive. I don't know. It's cut off here. There were 189 studies done by independent scientists and science organizations that had no skin in the game, and all of these found BPA to be a chemical of concern. There were only 14 studies that seemed to indicate that BPA was safe, and these were done by folks who had a financial interest in the results of their studies, and this was the manufacturers and folks who make BPA. So I think that the science is on our side. We are not banning BPA. We are asking merchants to only put on their store shelves baby bottles and sippy cups that do not have BPA in them. Whether or not we are the first or the last or whatever state to do something is irrelevant to me. We have hundreds of, I don't know, maybe thousands of babies born every single year. And our own pollution control agency, in a report they published, I believe it was January of 2008, said that estrogen disruptors are of concern and that the science is mounting that we should be paying attention. And I agree with Senator Rosen. I do think that the time has come, or the time needs to come, when we are not doing things chemical by chemical. But that's the way the current TSCA system is set up, and the TSCA system is failing. Meanwhile, children are being born and being exposed to a chemical that is harmful. And all I'm asking us to do is, in a very small, very simple way, to take the cautionary approach for the smallest, most vulnerable citizens in our state, and I know they don't have a vote, but their parents do, and take sippy cups and baby bottles off the shelves that have BPA in them, and this is after the year 2010.
Senator Scoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I rise to support Senator Rummel's effort. You know, it is true we have a process that we're putting in place, or Senator Scheid is working hard to put a process in place to bring us better information on this issue. But Senator Rummel has a very narrowly crafted bill. It's just dealing with baby bottles and little cups with covers. And I think that for our youngest, that we should make this small effort today and support Senator Rummel's effort.
Senator Jungbauer?
Thank you, Mr. President, members. I want to make a couple things very clear again. Is right now, consumers have a choice. You do not have to buy anything with BPA. Products are clearly labeled in the marketplace today if they do not contain BPAs. The second thing is estrogen disruptors, and BPA in particular, are chemicals of concern when they exist in their raw form. The question is, do they come out of the products that they are in? And that is what the science is telling us, is that the FDA's research is saying they do not release in any significant amounts from the products they're in. It is not a raw form of a BPA. So just because they're listed on a chemical of concern, these chemicals in their raw form are of concern and do enter the human system quite rapidly, and most of them maintain themselves in the human system for some length of time. But when they're mixed with other things, and in this case BPA is a stabilizer in a plastic and allows that plastic to be flexible, the whole key is, does it come out of that product or does it not? And the FDA does not find any significant amounts of it being released from the products. The consumers can choose today if they want the BPA-free product or not. They're available. We do not need to have, and I guess to Senator Rummel's point, she says it's not a ban. Well, it says it's a prohibition. I think that's a ban, but I could be wrong.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jungbauer, when the FDA made its findings that it was safe or whatever they said about it, their own scientific advisory panel asked them to go back and not look just at the two industry-funded studies they did, but to look at all the studies. I mean, that's one of the problems we have here. We sort of make the assumption that all these studies are equivalent, and it seems every time you have a toxic chemical out there, a potential risk to the public and for cancer or endocrine disruptors or whatever, whenever we have a chemical of concern, the industry does a whole bunch of studies, and they all say the chemical is perfectly safe. I've seen it where one year they're saying it's totally safe, the next year they're withdrawing a product from the market because their studies weren't the right ones. And so when you look at the difference between the independent studies, which usually in this case are saying the chemical is of serious concern, and the industry-funded ones, which are saying it's not, well, even if you give them equal weight, which you shouldn't because there's a conflict of interest there, but even if you give them equal weight, you know, when it's dealing with kids, maybe we shouldn't be saying, let's wait until we can prove beyond all doubt that it's going to kill them, prove beyond all doubt that something's going to harm somebody. Maybe we should decide ahead of time, until we're sure that the product is safe, we shouldn't be allowing it to be used for little kids.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, and I rise to support Senator Rummel's bill. Members, we heard this in Senator Metzen's committee, and before going in, I thought that, you know, this was probably, I was probably not going to vote for it. But after listening to the testimony, I changed my mind for a couple different reasons, and this kind of goes to what Senator Jungbauer said. Senator Jungbauer said, well, you should let the market take care of this. Well, it looks like the market's doing a pretty good job of taking care of it, but I think Senator Rummel would do an even better job of taking care of it. But, you know, CVS, Walmart, Kmart, Toys R Us, they all took this off the shelf. So I do believe, and Sunoco, one of the largest chemical producers in the United States, no longer will sell this to any company that is going to put it in a child's product. So, you know, the market is starting to come the right way. I believe that they've probably looked at some of the independent studies and said, you know, why take a chance? So, folks, if there's any question at all, I think we should err on the side of safety. We all know that infants are more susceptible to different chemicals and diseases and everything else than we are as adults. So we're just talking about little kids here. So let's just make sure that we take care of them as best as possible.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, once again, I did read the research, and I'm willing to bet that other people that are standing here did not read the research, so I'm kind of taken aback by that. It is the difference of the raw product versus the product's ability to be released into the environment or into a human being in the product it's in. And the second thing, I find it very disingenuous to hear this kind of a worry about an estrogen disruptor when this coming from the same body that mandated endocrine disruptors in alternative builders in automatic dishwashing detergent. So members, we're going to ban an estrogen disruptor right after we mandated that we put endocrine disruptors out into our environment. That's pretty disingenuous.
Is there further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I just want to go back, and we heard testimony in committee to this effect as well, and just point out what we're being asked to accept here is that the FDA, who has looked at this product numerous times and concludes that there is no harm to anybody by using this chemical in products. But the argument in favor of doing this is that the FDA and people in industry are together in some kind of a conspiracy to do harm to the public when they know that it is harmful. And that's what we're being asked to affirm, that view. And I think that when we do that, it sends a really bad message to the public. We're telling the public, don't trust the FDA. Don't trust the marketplace. Trust instead this legislative body, because our wisdom is superior to the FDA's and to the studies that have been done and to the marketplace that is, as has been pointed out, responding to concerns and things that people are concerned about. And that's what the marketplace always does. The marketplace responds to what people want to buy. So, members, I'm going to urge you to vote against this bill, but Mr. Chairman, I'm going to withdraw my request for a roll call.
Senator Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to correct two things that have been stated that I think are incorrect, and it's important for the public to understand. The first is that the FDA has now requested that its science advisory panel revisit the conclusions that were made regarding BPA. So it is not true that the FDA has concluded that BPA is safe. The second assumption that was made on the Senate floor that I know to be incorrect is that parents can clearly make choices when they go to purchase either baby bottles or sippy cups. And as a mother of a young child, I know that this is not the case. It is clear that now baby bottles are most of the time labeled whether they are BPA free or not, but is certainly not always the case. And it is certainly less so that sippy cups are labeled as to whether they are BPA free or not. And so I'd like to thank Senator Rummel for her legislation and reiterate that this is needed so that parents and concerned family members can make safe choices for their children and their families.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Are there three hands requesting a roll call vote? There are three hands. There will be a roll call vote. Senator Rummel.
Once again, I would urge you to support this bill, members of the Senate. We do have the governor's support. We've had bipartisan support all along, and I urge you to support this bill. Your constituents are looking for this kind of reaffirmation that you care about them and you care about their smallest children.
Senator Sanjam.
Thank you, Mr. President. I walked in here today thinking I was going to vote for this bill. You know, it's like a pretty easy vote. But, you know, having drawn attention to the FDA article and I pulled it up, it's pretty clear. All you got to do is Google it, members, and the FDA reaffirms the safety of products, and this is in reference to bisphenol A from polycarbonate plastic and epoxy resins, including products intended for use by infants or children. So, I mean, you can trust your FDA or not, but I think, and this is 2008, August, if there are more recent reports, I'd certainly be welcome to them, but the FDA has reported on this and affirmed the safety of these products. So, again, vote for your FDA or not, but I think I'm going to stand by the FDA on this one.
Senator Rubble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I respect you very much, Senator Sanjam, but the FDA only used two industry-funded studies to come to their conclusion. Their own National Toxicology Program, that's the program that advises the FDA, told them to go back and look again at all the studies. There were 189 independent studies that found BPA to be a chemical of concern. Members, I urge your support.
Senator Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that everybody vote green on this. I mean, it's pretty easy. Now, Senator Sinjum mentioned the FDA again, and you know, the FDA is made up of people just like the folks in this room, and they make mistakes too. And they have made plenty in the past. I mean, two that I remember are Vioxx and Fen-Phen. And I'm sure that, you know, that Dr. Dill or Dr. Solon could probably tell you of a few others that they've made mistakes on. So, folks, we're not saying that the FDA is all wet and they're always wrong. No, that's a body of people just like this body, and we've made mistakes, and I think on this one they've made mistakes, and Senator Rummel is trying to rectify that mistake.
So further discussion on the bill. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rummel, I've been trying to get information from the governor's office to confirm whether or not he's going to sign your bill. We can't find anybody, or I can't find anyone that said that. Can you tell me who you talked to in the governor's office that said they would be in support of this bill the way it's presented?
Senator Rummel.
Senator Limmer, Representative, I think it's Zeller, who's Republican working on the House side, got that confirmation from the governor.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rummel, but you have not had any communication with the governor's office at all over this? So it's kind of, dare I say, third hand? All right.
Senator Rubble?
We tried to get a meeting with the governor, but we did not succeed in that. And so we are relying on what Representative Zeller told us.
So there's further discussion on the bill. Senator Rummel renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 247 be recommended to pass. A roll call vote has been requested. The Secretary will take the roll. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? Have all senators voted who desire to vote? Secretary will close the roll, but there being 54 ayes and 11 nays, the motion prevails. The next item before us is number 108 on general orders, Senate File 1489. Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1489 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Ingebretson.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a very straightforward bill. Just a little history, a little background here, if I can. I won't take up much of your time, but back in 2003, then-Senator Samson Westrum passed this original law to allow a sewer district to form, which was called West Central Lake Sewer District in my district, which included six townships. Actually, when it first started, it didn't include quite that many townships, but it grew to six townships and about five or six major lakes in my district. And what they were looking to do was actually put the big pipe sewer system around those lakes, and over the period of, as you can see, several years, there was a lot of discussion, and the sewer project grew and grew and grew, and actually grew to about $53 million, and quite frankly, folks, what happened was is that it became very cost prohibitive for the amount of people to be able to share in the expense of this particular project. So the six townships involved voted to dissolve the Central Lakes Area Sewer District. They came to me to basically dissolve this district, and that's what this bill is. It dissolves it, and by dissolving it and shutting it down, basically, it gives the options of the members of the sewer district and the township supervisors a better means of distributing the cost of the of what they had actually spent putting the district together over the past 6 years. So I certainly will stand for any questions.
Is there discussion on the motion? Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Ingebrigtsen moves when this committee to arise, Senate File 1489 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item before us is number 99 on General Order, Senate File 140. Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee do arise, at Senate File 140 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 140 restores consumer rights to bring an action for violation of the state's Consumer Fraud Act that was removed by a 2000 Supreme Court decision. In 1973, this legislature enacted the so-called Private Attorney General Statute at Section 8.31. Its purpose was to give the little guy, the average consumer, the opportunity to obtain redress for violations of consumer protection laws over which the Attorney General had jurisdiction. Oftentimes, a particular violation is not on the Attorney General's radar, or they don't have the office resources to pursue the litigation, but an individual who is wronged under the consumer fraud statute could enlist the support and assistance of a private lawyer to act on the public's behalf, on the Attorney General's behalf, to bring these kind of cases. For 27 years, this law was in effect and operating without issue, without opposition or complaint by businesses as well as the consumers. When the Minnesota Supreme Court, in a case called Lee versus Nystrom, established a multi-pronged, quote, public interest, close quote, test. Since that time, no consumer plaintiff has been able to survive a summary judgment when bringing a Section 8.31 claim. In effect, what the Supreme Court did in Lee was to turn the purpose of the Private Attorney General's statute on its head, cutting off both an avenue of relief for aggrieved consumers and a deterrent against consumer abuse. This bill would have the effect of statutorily overcoming the insurmountable burden consumers have faced in having the Consumer Fraud Act claims under the Private Attorney General's statute heard in our courts. This bill will do so by declaring that, as a matter of law, claims brought under the 325F Consumer Fraud Statute are, in fact, in the public interest and meet that standard established, required by the statute. To allay any concerns that anyone might have about a floodgate of litigation that would might occur, let me share a few points with you. First of all, this bill is very narrow in scope. It only applies to Consumer Fraud Act claims, not claims under any other consumer protection statute. Also, it is not creating any new right or cause of action. It's not creating a new legal basis for lawsuits. It is simply establishing the public interest that is found underneath the Attorney General's statute. We did some research to determine how many cases we might project would be brought under this statute. As important as they are for the individual cases, there are not that many cases that are brought under this statute. Our research of a random sampling of 200 contract cases filed before the Supreme Court's Lee decision shows that only 5 out of those 200 brought Section 8.31 claims, or claims under the Private Attorney General statute. So one should not be concerned about this bill opening the floodgates for a rash of lawsuits. This bill does not create any new causes of action. Its purpose is to clarify the law as it currently exists, to make it clear that any action to enforce the rights of individual consumers injured by deceptive or unlawful trade practices is and always has been in the public interest and ultimately benefits the economy of our state by promoting a just and equitable marketplace. I ask for your support. I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Is there discussion on the motion? Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, I'm wondering if Senator Latz would yield.
He will yield.
Thank you. Senator Latz, would you, I understand that there's no fiscal note, although one was requested. Can you advise the body about what's happened with the status of the fiscal note? I know that this bill had one last year, and it showed almost $1 million in costs for the Supreme Court, including the requirement that we hire at least 1.7 in a judge unit, plus some administrative staff. The Supreme Court tallied it at almost $1 million last year. I'm wondering, where's the fiscal note on this version of the bill?
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I have not been provided with a fiscal note. I can only conclude that there must have been a re-evaluation by the courts of the costs that may or may not be connected with this litigation. Last year's fiscal note, I understand, was not $1 million. It was $800,000. I can only conclude that the Supreme Court must have looked at it and concluded that they really would not anticipate the increased litigation. And so basically they reevaluated their position. But I have not seen a fiscal note. I would assume in the process, if there had been one, I would have been provided one.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, I think Senator Latz makes the case here that this bill is premature for discussion on the Senate floor. I know that my House member, Paul Coles, has asked for a fiscal note on this bill 3 times. And I also know that if there's a fiscal note that assures that there's no cost, we get those as well. I think we should wait on this bill until we have actually received a fiscal note that would tell us whether we are incurring another $1 million in our budget by enacting this bill or not. And I would hope that Senator Latz would agree to withdraw the bill until a time when we can see the fiscal note and make sure that there are no costs, or at least evaluate them when we make a vote on this bill. I think it's an important aspect.
I went through the chamber automated system and looked up. Fiscal note does not show up here if you look on the links there. Further discussion on the motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
Senator Ortman is in the Judiciary Committee. This matter was heard April 2nd in Judiciary, and the question arose at that time about the absence of a fiscal note. And to my knowledge, there has been no follow-up action with regard to that request. So there's been plenty of time since this bill was introduced and heard in committee if any members were concerned about the fiscal impact.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't serve on the Finance Committee, and I am concerned about a fiscal note. I think it was brought up in the Judiciary Committee, but we've not seen one, and I think it's a fair request. When money is so tight right now, I think we should be concerned about the cost before we just adopt a policy that we aren't necessarily certain will be providing the value that we expect for $1 million each year. I think that this is premature. I don't really want to argue the substance of this bill yet without seeing it. I will, but I prefer that Senator Latz do the right thing here and withdraw this from general order so we can see the fiscal note that has been requested. I know the Supreme Court has been backed up. I know that they will get to this as soon as they can. I'm sure we'll get to it before the end of session, and we'll have a chance to really have a good debate on this bill when we have a little bit more information.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know the courts are backed up, and the budget that we're going to give them this year is going to further back them up. And if we lay on the possibility of additional civil suits that they're going to have to deal with, it'll back them up further. And so I do think it is important for us to know how much this might cost the courts, especially in light of the fact that we are going to make some cuts, and the courts will feel those. And so if we add to their workload potentially because of additional legislation that we pass, then we will see further backups in the courts and further delays in our whole process.
Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Latz yield for a question?
He will yield.
Senator Latz, could you explain this consumer fraud? Does that mean any time a consumer, someone who bought something, goes to court on the basis that they were defrauded, that it is determined then to be in the public interest?
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandiver, if they bring a claim under Section 325F.60, which is the Consumer Fraud Act, it's not any time someone feels that they've been ripped off by a business. They have to be bringing an action for fraud, which is the intentional deception or misrepresentation in connection with the sale of the product or whatever the transaction is that gives rise to it. Yes, this would declare, as the law was for 27 years before the year 2000, that those actions are in the public interest.
Senator Vandiver.
So, Senator Latz, if I understand this, then if, let's say, a convicted felon buys a gun from the local dealer who assures him that it works, and he robs a convenience store and goes to shoot it and finds out that it doesn't work, and feels he's been defrauded, gets caught, and has to go to jail, so he sues the gun dealer for fraud, then would this, under that statute, this would be in the public interest?
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandiver, if they are suing not only under contract, but under Section 8.31, acting on behalf of the, as a private attorney general, that particular prong, as a consumer, yes, it would be determined to be in the public interest. The statute does not specify that one product is not allowed to be covered by the consumer fraud statute. It could be baby bottles, or it could be guns, or it could be any other consumer item or consumer-related activity that could be the subject of a Consumer Fraud Act claim. If it is brought not by the Attorney General's office but a private lawyer under 325F.60, yes, then it is determined to be in the public interest. But they would still need to satisfy all of the elements of a fraud claim under the statute in order to establish recovery. What has happened is that there has been this hurdle of determining whether any particular action is in the public interest according to this extensive test set out by the Supreme Court, a hurdle that no consumer has been able to satisfy to have their case actually heard on the merits. But it would not change the criteria for being successful in court on the merits at all.
Senator Vandiver.
Well, would Senator Latz yield for another question?
You will yield.
Senator Latz, under current law, what would happen in the example I used? Would it be determined then that it wasn't in the public interest and the lawsuit couldn't go forward, or would there be another way for that to go forward?
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vanderveer, it is likely that there will be other causes of action that could be brought, but as a practical matter, it's unlikely that the lawsuit would be able to go forward unless the actual damages were quite substantial. The reason for Consumer Fraud Act claims in the first place is that many times there are relatively small actual dollar losses in connection with a particular alleged deception or misrepresentation. So for an individual consumer, it would not be worth it, frankly, to hire a lawyer to represent them. However, if you bring an action under the Section 8.31 and you allege a violation of 325F.60, it does provide for attorney's fees as part of the remedy for a prevailing consumer, and that makes it possible then for a lawyer to take on the case and to pursue the litigation on behalf of a consumer that may have suffered, say, $1.75's worth of damages, but there might be 1,000 or 10,000 victims out there of this same misrepresentation in, say, billing practices or invoicing practices, this would enable that cause of action to go forward.
Senator Vanderveer.
Well, thank you, Senator Latz. It just seems to me that this is a bit broad and that it would more than likely, I mean, it looks fairly obvious that it would dramatically increase the court activity and the number of lawsuits in the state and resulting in at least a lot more expense, legal expense, for businesses if we go forward with this. And it does seem a bit extreme, and maybe if you could come up with something, a little less, all-encompassing, I think we'd be a lot better off. So I think maybe this should go back for a little bit of work and see if we can't come up with something a little more balanced.
Sarah Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, we've had a little discussion about how this legislation could likely result in more judicial expenses. I think it's equally important to stress that there's a large group of employers and job creators and trade associations that represent those people who think this is going to result in a larger burden on our business community right now. Mr. Chair, in this kind of economy, can we give these guys a break? Let me just read a couple of these groups to you. You've got some handouts at your desk. One's from the Minnesotans Against Lawsuit Abuse. But who is that? Who is that? Well, it's you and me. It's the Waseca Chamber. It's the Burnsville Chamber. It's General Mills. It's the Twin West Chamber out where Senator Latz and I represent. The Minnesota Retailers, Minnesota Truckers. I mean, I'm not even going to read them all, Mr. Chair, but the Lakeville Area Chamber, the Dakota County Chamber, the Midway Chamber. Let's give these guys a little break. Let's give them a little breather and slow down on this legislation.
Senator Wortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could ask Senator Latz to yield, I'm hoping, Senator, that you will withdraw this at this time. Well, Mr. President, then I would ask for a roll call vote. I think it's unfortunate that we aren't going to get the information we need to properly have a vote on this bill. We know last year it cost $1 million to our courts, and now we're just going to pretend we don't know that there's going to be a cost to the Supreme Court and to our courts by passing this bill. But there's another reason to vote no, members. The reason to vote no is to understand about what the private attorney general provisions in our law really are all about. The attorney general works for the residents. The attorney general is the lawyer for the people. But the lawyer for the people, the attorney general, often has more to do than to get involved in every conceivable consumer fraud case. And so we developed this case law that allowed private attorneys to do that same work when the case is in the public interest. That's what our Supreme Court has said. It makes sense to have a private attorney general when the case is in the public interest. What we're now going to do is say that every case with a consumer fraud claim is in the public interest, and that attorney should be paid fees. That's contrary to the Supreme Court. It's contrary to our statutes. It's contrary to case law. And it doesn't make good sense. What we're saying now is that a lawyer who can find a client who has been defrauded in a small amount with no damages still should be entitled to attorney's fees because that case is always in the public interest. Isn't it possible that that case is never in the public interest? Isn't it possible that the court should determine what is in the public's interest before deciding whether attorney's fees should be authorized and that attorney should be authorized to act as the private attorney general on behalf of all of the people of the state of Minnesota? There are good reasons to vote no for this bill, members, and I hope that you'll do it. This will be a huge expansion of the law, and let me tell you that I practiced in this area. I successfully defended consumer fraud cases in my private practice, and the law worked well. Because if an individual was not harmed, there shouldn't be a claim for attorney's fees. There shouldn't be a lawsuit. There should be other remedies, but not litigation. The courts have been very good about summary judgment, but with this, that summary judgment will not occur because the courts will be hand-tied. They'll be told that every time an attorney shows up with a case with a consumer fraud aspect to it, it is always filed in the public's interest, and that attorney has a right to attorney's fees. That makes litigation very expensive. It makes business very expensive. Members, we should be more discerning about who's acting on behalf of all the people of the state of Minnesota and who we authorize to be a private attorney general in the state of Minnesota.
A roll call has been requested. Are there three hands for a roll call vote? One. Are there three hands? I see three hands. There will be a roll call vote. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, our courts are clogged. Our businesses are hanging on by their fingernails. We don't need this bill. Vote no, please.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm a bit surprised by the level of vocal commentary here because the bill passed with bipartisan unanimous support in the Judiciary Committee. I'm also surprised because the facts simply do not support the broad, unfounded allegations that it's going to open up a slew of cases coming into the judiciary. We did the background research. We went over 200 cases that were filed before the Supreme Court's decision in Lee versus Nystrom. In only five of those cases was it even brought under Section 8.31. Only five out of 200 cases was there a Section 8.31 claim. So there's no large body of cases out there just waiting to come beating into the courts to take over the court system. It isn't going to happen. And I frankly don't understand what businesses that were listed by Senator Michelle are concerned about. This is a Consumer Fraud Act basis. If there is no fraud going on, then they have nothing to worry about. If they are not intentionally, deceptively misrepresenting the quality of their product or a characteristic of their product or somehow misleading the consumer, then they have nothing to worry about. And if a plaintiff comes in alleging a claim like this and they can't establish the seven or eight separate elements of a fraud case that are required, these are very difficult cases to win. If they can't prove those cases to the satisfaction of a jury or a judge, then they don't win. The problem now, since the year 2000, is they don't even get that far with their cases because they bring the one case on behalf of the one consumer. Even though it's clearly in the public interest, the courts are throwing the case out on summary judgment because they've got this now very high hurdle to overcome before a private person can bring a cause of action to enforce this law. The Attorney General's office doesn't have the resources to bring the cases anymore to enforce this law because their budget has been cut along with other budgets throughout state government for years now. There wasn't a problem before the year 2000. Now all of a sudden, when we simply seek to restore the opportunity to bring an already existing cause of action in the courts, now we've got this pushback? It rings hollow, members. It rings hollow. Vote in favor of the average consumers of Minnesota who are looking to you to give them the opportunity once again to avoid being defrauded, or more particularly, to make those who are defrauding them accountable.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to be brief, this bill was heard in the Judiciary Committee. I think that it passed on a voice vote. And I'm sorry if Senator Letts thought that was broad, unanimous support for this bill. I assure you it was not. This is not good for Minnesota when every lawyer that walks into a courtroom can say that they're there in the public interest and it's assumed that they're going to get paid for bringing that lawsuit, because then you have lawyers that prey on plaintiffs that might not even be willing to file a lawsuit other than the fact that they've been encouraged by a lawyer who might get attorney's fees. We don't need that kind of practice in the state of Minnesota. We have an attorney general, and we have private attorney generals when the public interest is at stake. I think the current system is just fine.
Further discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Latz renews his motion. When this committee do arise, Senate files 140 be recommended pass. A roll call vote has been requested. The secretary will take the roll. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 26 nays, the motion prevails. The next item is number 100 on general orders, Senate file 536. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate file 536 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate file 536 is a bill that allows but does not require government entities, including cities, the state, the University of Minnesota, and the MNSCU, to adopt policies that would require persons or entities who contract with a governmental unit to hire a certain number of low-income persons, former offenders, or in the case of the cities, low-income city residents, in the performance of construction or services contracts. This is not a mandate. This is not a requirement. But rather, it allows them to establish such practices, and if they do, set certain parameters. The bill would also allow the governmental unit to impose penalties and restrictions on future contractual agreements for not meeting the terms of the agreement. It also stipulates that people would be hired for the duration of the contract, not just for a certain number of hours. The intention of the bill is to allow the hiring of groups such as city residents, low-income people, and former offenders who might not otherwise benefit from new projects in development. We would allow our cities to join other cities across the state, across the nation, such as Denver, Boston, and San Diego, who are establishing policies that expand employment opportunities for city residents, low-income, and former offenders. I'd ask for your support.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Higgins moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 536 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item is number 83 on general orders, Senate File 1462. Senator Prettner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1462 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Prettner Solon.
Mr. Chair and members, Minnesota has come a long way in planning and preparing for public health emergencies since September 11, 2001. We've learned a lot of lessons from Hurricane Katrina and have used those skills for the 35W bridge collapse, for protecting public health during flooding in Minnesota, and for investigating health threats, including foodborne illnesses. And right now we're facing the swine flu epidemic, which started this past week in Mexico and now has spread to the United States across the North American continent and is also spreading throughout Europe and New Zealand. This legislative proposal strengthens our legal framework to support rapid and efficient use of our resources and strategies to protect the public's health. This legislation is largely modifying and updating a few provisions in the state's emergency preparedness laws. Specifically, the bill accomplishes the following. It continues quarantine provisions already in law. It extends liability protections for businesses helping with mass dispensing. It authorizes some new methods for the rapid distribution of medications, including the use of U.S. Postal Service workers. It broadens the use of Minnesota Responds Medical Reserve Corps and defines the rights of volunteers and their employers during a deployment. And it enables rapid response for drug labeling and medical screening practices during serious emergencies when time is absolutely critical. Mr. Chair, I do have a couple of amendments. One of these, I move the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A51 amendment.
Senator Prettner Solon moves to amend Senate File 1462 as follows, page 4, line 14. This is Amendment A51.
On the amendment, Senator Prettner Solon.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this language is actually passed in Senator Marty's committee, I believe. It was passed as an amendment previously. Somehow it was not picked up in the engrossing office, and so we need to repass it at this time.
Discussion on the A51 amendment. Seeing Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Prettner Solon. We had a discussion in judiciary when this bill went through regarding the use of deadly force, and we altered the definition on a little bit. Is that still in the bill?
Senator Limmer, we're on the A51 amendment, which apparently
I'll hold my question.
Was not picked up in the engrossment from the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee. Discussion on the A51 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A51 amendment is adopted. Senator Prettner Solon?
Mr. Chair, I also have the A5 amendment.
Secretary will report the A5 amendment.
And
Senator Prettner Solon moves to amend Senate File 1462 as follows, page 6, line 34. This is Amendment A-5.
On the amendment, Senator Prettner Solon.
Mr. Chair, this basically clarifies what a household representative is, and it sets an effective date being the date after final enactment.
Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, Senator Prettner Solon moves the A5 amendment. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A5 amendment is adopted. Senator Prettner Solon.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to respond to Senator Limmer, if I may, at this time. The language that he is concerned about was in Section 1 and 2, and it removed language. that peace officers may use force. That language has been removed from Sections 1 and 2. I would urge your support on this bill.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Pretner Solon, if you would, my understanding is that this bill or this provision law had a sunset provision and that is being removed. Is that still in the bill?
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, yes, that sunset language, it does remove the sunset.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I think that we'd be wise to not remove the sunset provision in the language. I understand that there is that these provisions were passed and they have never been utilized, and I think it is a good thing, given the powers that it provides, that these should come back to the legislature for periodic review. And I'm wondering, Senator Pretner Solon, would you be amenable to accepting an amendment to restore sunset provisions and extending them out for a couple of years just so that this would come back before us rather than make it a permanent structure?
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, I would remind you that we did remove the language that was objectionable about giving peace officers the ability to use force, and I'm not sure whether you still have concerns then about that sunset date. I also might state that a case of swine flu was found in Minnesota, don't anybody quote me, that didn't happen. There was an incident where somebody was tested, and they have been asked to stay isolated, and they have voluntarily done that. They have agreed to do that until the testing is determined. But if force were necessary, I mean, if that quarantine requirement were necessary, they need the ability to be able to quarantine people so that people are not infected.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, sir, I appreciate the changes that you've offered to the bill. I think there are, at least for me, some concerns still about the powers that are granted are fairly broad and do allow, I believe, the imposition of these quarantine procedures and cases without providing for necessarily some kind of review of those actions on the part of a court. And that is troubling, I guess, just the powers that are being granted. And I'm just thinking that it might be good to have this come back before the legislature. It has never been, the powers under this bill, as I understand it, have never been used. And I guess I would be inclined to say let's bring it back again in a couple of years and take another look at it. But I guess I could offer an amendment. I think there are three sunset provisions in the bill. Is that something you'd be opposed to doing?
Senator Pretner Solon.
Again, I would urge you not. I would urge you to remove the sunset at this time. There is a court order is needed within 36 hours of a request for isolation or quarantine. There are lots of options to protect people under this law.
Sarah Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Pretner Solon. I remember a few years back when we started the Bioterrorist Emergency Act. I was on the conference committee, as Senator Betzold was also. And when we created that, that was in reaction to 9/11 in the event that there might be a terrorist activity that would create some type of emergency, an attack, whether it was biological or perhaps nuclear. And the question that came up was again on sunset. We looked at that bill with the idea that we would not be in a permanent state of emergency and that someday that threat would go away, and that's why we placed a sunset on it, so that we could return to this issue from time to time and determine whether or not it's necessary to have these type of emergency provisions in law perpetually, and that we intended to revisit this, and if needed, we would simply extend it to another sunset. Your bill, by removing sunsets, makes this into a perpetual status in law, and I'm wondering why we need to do that. The sunsetting process has served us well since the 9/11 days, and at the same time, we've actually been forced to tweak and manage and adjust some of our state statutes because of the fact that we returned to it in the name of a sunset provision. It forced us to perfect some of that law. I don't know if this law is so perfected that it should be a permanent inclusion in our state statutes. I think we should have a sunset. And I was wondering why we even got off the track of sunsetting to begin with, rather than just a simple extension.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Senator Limmer, first of all, the sunset provision's only on, it's only on two provisions. It's not on on the quarantine or the isolation part of the bill. And it is only on the police officer's use of force, and the police officer's use of force, or the peace officer's use of force, has been removed from the bill now, and on the commissioner's authority. So this only remains at this point on that section of the bill. And I would also remind you that the swine flu is an example of why this is not a short-term situation, and terrorism continues to be a threat.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, members, the Judiciary Committee, Policy Committee had a long discussion on this bill, and I think that Senator Limmer is raising some very good points, which he raised in committee for our consideration. I think that his recollection of how this section of the law came to be was very persuasive, and it led us to, in the committee, take care of the to make sure that law enforcement was really acting under the direction of the Commissioner of Health in those specific areas. But, you know, in recent days, I was reminded of this bill as I've been listening to the news and watching the news on the most recent, really potentially global epidemic outbreak of the swine flu. And, in fact, driving into work this morning, I heard the story on National Public Radio that was very concerning to me, because the scientist who was interviewed on that show was remarking on the amount of vaccinations that we have stockpiled, both at the national level and at the state level, to address potential pandemic outbreaks, like potentially the swine flu strand. And I was reminded once again that even though we have this statute in the law post September 11th, I think that we were very thoughtful in wanting to put a mechanism in place so that we have entities putting plans together to be responsive and responsible to the public if and when we need to. And I think that the most recent outbreak just is a good example that it never hurts to be prepared, and it never hurts to, in a time when there's a non-emergency, to be thoughtful about how we do this, so that when we do have an emergency in place, we do have the plans in place to be able to be responsive to the public and to do it right. And so I think that we, Senator Prentice-Solon has done a very good job in ushering this bill through the various committees. I think each of the committees have dutifully looked at the components that are in its jurisdiction. I think we've put together a bill that makes sense, makes good public policy, and I think we will be in a good position in putting these plans. It doesn't mean that we won't need to come back and tweak with it as we look at different pieces of it, but I think this is a good start, and it was built on a very good foundation, so I would ask for your support.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and members, I too would not support putting a sunset on this. We have professionals all over the state working Homeland Security Emergency Management, whether they are in our fire departments, our police departments, our state agencies, our health departments, who live and breathe the emergency preparedness that we all will need someday. I also heard Dr. Michael Osterholm on the radio this morning. He's been warning of epidemics and pandemics for years and years, and we have, I think, the obligation to make sure that our emergency preparedness folks are indeed prepared, and that they know what the laws are, and that they don't change every couple of years, or that they expire in a year. It's important for them as they go forward to continue to be prepared, continue to get the best practices, not only in this state, but around the nation, and indeed around the world. And we should be very thankful that they're there doing that. The health department is, I think, one of the leaders in the nation on being prepared. We just shouldn't sunset such work.
Sir, further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Prettner-Solin moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1462 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. If Senator Pogemiller can get back to the chamber, we need to have him designate a second list. He doesn't? Okay. Wait. He's coming. Miller.
Mr. President, there's a list number two. We're going to go to about 325 or 330. List number two, number 102, number 27, number 48, number 29, 114, and 51. And should we do Senator Solon? Are you ready for? Let's do Senator Solon's before your Senator Torres Ray.
Senator Torres Ray, you mean? Who's Senator Solon's? Okay. So this would be number 27 on General Order, Senate File 1399. Senator Prettner Solon.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1399 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Prettner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill will authorize Spirit Mountain Recreation Authority in Duluth to secure its water supply for its snowmaking efforts from a different location. Spirit Mountain makes snow intensively early in the skiing season, as soon as the temperatures are cold enough to make snow. The water used for the snow is currently treated water from the city's water utility. The water comes from Lake Superior and returns to the lake when it melts. This request would allow Spirit Mountain to take water from St. Louis Bay, filter it, and then bring it to the mountain to make snow. The water comes from the same source and returns to the same source when it melts. Our water appropriation laws provide that taking water in this quantity requires legislative review and approval. The rather high use of water at the start of the ski season exceeds the limit threshold. And so we are here to secure the necessary legislative approval for them to move forward. And with that, I will end my comments and hope to have your support. Thank you.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Prettner-Solin moves, and when this committee do arise, Senate File 1399 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Torres Reyes, we have number before us, number 102 on General Order, Senate File 1009. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do have problems with my.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1009 makes changes to current prostitution law.
You need to move it that when this committee do arise.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. I do move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1009 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1009 makes changes to current prostitution law. It adds a definition of place of public accommodation. It increases the penalty for a person who engages in prostitution in a public place to a gross misdemeanor, and it amends the public place prostitution crime language to make it consistent with other prostitution crime law. Section 4 also amends current law so that the driving record of a person convicted of acting as a patron in a prostitution-related offense involving the use of a motor vehicle will be available to law enforcement, and it will classify the finding as a public data in the person if the person has previously been convicted of a prostitution crime. Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment that was proposed in judiciary, is the A1 amendment to better define public place to clarify the definition of public place.
The Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Torres Rey moves to amend Senate File 1009 as follows. Page 1, delete Section 1 and insert. This is Amendment A-1.
On the amendment, Senator Torres Rey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, this is to clarify the definition that we have in the law to make sure that it included all public places, and it adds steam rooms, saunas, massage parlors, shopping malls, and other public shopping areas, and it also includes the effective date, which I did not have in the language that was presented to judiciary.
Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, Senator Torres Rey moves that the A1 amendment be adopted. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Torres Rey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will stand for questions, and I will ask for your support. Members, we have significant problems in the city of Minneapolis dealing with prostitution right now, and we need to put these changes in place in order to deal with this significant problem. So I will ask for your support.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Torres Rey moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1009 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item before the committee is number 48 on general orders, Senate File 1217, Senator Higgins.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1217 be recommended to pass.
On the motion, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a Department of Health agency bill, and it ensures that severely injured people are promptly transported from the scene of injury to and treated at a hospital that is the most appropriate to care for the severity of the injury. This bill is a follow-up to the 2008 extension of the Trauma, Triage, and Transportation Guidelines. Specifically, the bill provides that major trauma patients would be transported to the closest trauma hospital in Greater Minnesota, not the highest designated, as statute now provides. And it allows ambulances to transport metro area major trauma patients to either a level 1 or a level 2 hospital. It also establishes quarterly updates on major trauma scene ground ambulance transports to each regional trauma advisory council. This bill has broad support. The Minnesota Ambulance Association supports it, as does the Minnesota Hospital Association. The trauma systems, the statewide trauma system was enacted in 2005. Its sole focus is on the most critically injured major trauma patients, not the vast majority of injuries that are not life-threatening. Those injuries are not included in any changes in this bill. As the system has developed, we've learned that the trauma transportation directives need to be modified, and so this bill does that. Mr. Chair, at this time, I would also like to offer the A2 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A2 amendment.
Senator Higgins moves to amend Senate File 1217 as follows. Page 1 after line 6, insert. This is Amendment A-2.
Mr. Chair, this amendment is the same as a bill that has passed off the floor unanimously, Senate File 230. It is a bill that changes the system for physician assistance from a registration system to a licensure system. And it's getting hung up in that body that we don't talk about. So I'd ask your support for the amendment.
Is there a discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Higgins moves the A2 amendment. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Further discussion, Senator Prettner-Solin?
Mr. Chair, I have the A3 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A3 amendment.
Senator Prettner-Solin moves to amend Senate File 1217 as follows. Page 2 after line 25, insert. This is Amendment A-3.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Mr. Chair, this is also similar. This is the provision by which dental assistant is changed from a registered dental therapist to a licensed dental therapist. I urge your support.
Discussion on the A3 amendment. Seeing none, Senator Prettner-Solin moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on the bill? Further discussion. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, would Senator Higgins yield?
She will yield.
Senator Higgins, I was just going through the bill, and I was. Let's see if I can get down here. There's a spot in the bill. I think I'm going to paraphrase here. It seems like if there's a compromised airway, then the ambulance needs to go to the closest available hospital. And then somebody has to define what a compromised airway is. And I'm just thinking of my own situation relative to Rochester. If there's a medical transport in an ambulance that's fully staffed and equipped, both personnel-wise and technology-wise, to deal with a compromised airway, and they may be going from, for instance, St. Cloud to Rochester with a patient, would this bill preclude that from happening? You know, I'm assuming an ambulance, all equipped, radio contact into the respective emergency rooms and so on and so forth. And it just seems like the language would suggest that that couldn't occur. But maybe I'm reading it wrong, but I just have that concern as I'm reading it.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what Senator what the senator is asking. It now requires that it would that the people who are the most critically injured people would go to the most appropriate level of care. As it now stands, if the physician or the emergency room professionals believe that a patient should go to a level 1 trauma center and there's a level 2 trauma center on the way, they'd have to stop at the level 2, which could not provide the most appropriate care. This would ensure that if you need that highest level, most you are one of the most traumatically injured people, you would go to the highest level of care if it is deemed to be appropriate. You wouldn't stop at a hospital partway that could give you part of the resolution of your problem.
So further discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Higgins moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1217 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item before us is number 29 on general orders, Senate File 1425. Senator Scully.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1425 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Scully.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, in 2007, the legislature and the governor changed the way that we inspect and regulate elevators. There's a large number of elevators in rural Minnesota that are not for public use, that are our man lifts in our county grain and feed elevators. Originally, I had proposed to exempt these facilities from these regulations, but during the committee process, we've changed this to a study that the Department of Labor and Industry is going to do over the interim this summer, so we can make a more informed decision next year. I would ask for your support for this study.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Scoy moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1425 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item is number 114 on General Order, Senate File 747. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 747 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 747 represents the agreement reached by all of those who had an interest in the issue on non-conforming lots. It's been quite a controversial issue over a period of time, but with meetings with the realtors, with counties, townships, local government officials, the DNR, the issues have been resolved in this bill. And it's pretty detailed, but it is freeing up the ability of the owners of the land to direct its use, still within the realm of paying attention to the environmental impacts, the shoreland issues, water issues, and the local ordinances. And I would stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I've got counsel working on a very small amendment to your bill. It's actually a piece of a bill I have sitting on the floor. If we could progress it for probably a couple minutes, they'd probably have the amendment ready.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, I think it'll be better just to wait until tomorrow. So, Mr. Chairman, I would progress the bill. Request progress.
Progress requested. Progress granted on Senate File 747. The last item we have on this list is number 51 on General Orders at Senate File 556. Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 556, as amended, be recommended to pass.
Senator Lori.
On that motion, this is the bill, my little bitty non-controversial agency bill that kind of got a little bit controversial on Saturday regarding prohibitions at rest areas. The bill is now entirely silent on the drinking provision and really gets at the issue that got us started on this, which is the dumping and the littering at rest areas. And so I would appreciate members' support in passing the bill silent on the drinking piece. Thank you.
Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Lori moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 556 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now rise and report.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate will come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, a brief recess for the purposes of appointing conference committees.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate is in recess to the call of the chair.
Mr. President.
The Senate will come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, are there privileged reports at the desk?
There is a privileged report at the desk. The Secretary will read the privileged report.
Senator Pogemiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a Conference Committee on Senate file number 2082, Senators Betzold, Rest, Olsen, Kubley, and Jungbauer. On Senate file 819, Senators Latz, Scogin, and Jungbauer. On House file 2123, Senators Anderson, Saxhog, Chaudhry, Fredrickson, and Torres Rey. Senator Pogemiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, is there any other work at the desk?
Announcements of Senate interest. The following members, without objection, will be excused from portions of today's session. Senator Bonhoff all day. Senator Murphy from 2:40 until the end. Senator Coring from 1 o'clock to 2:55 p.m. Senator Dill from 3:15 to the end. Announcements of Senate interest. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will meet at 5 o'clock in room 107. 5 o'clock. Please be there on time.
Other announcements of Senate interest. Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the members of the Conference Committee on the Public Safety Policy Bill, we will be meeting immediately after the last body adjourns, and I believe the other body is still in room 5 in the SOB. And also, for those who are paying attention, the pertinent color is red.
I said announcements of Senate interest. Senator Partner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Energy Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee meeting will meet immediately in room 123. For the cap and trade hearing, we have an expert who is here from Washington, D.C., and a couple of other reports that we will be going through. This is a joint meeting with the House.
Mr. President.
We will have to, Sir Chaudhry.
The Environment Policy Committee will meet immediately after session adjourns. We have one bill to cover.
Other announcements. Without objection, we will revert to messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file 2251, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
First reading of House bills.
House file 2251, a bill for an act relating to state government finance, providing federal stimulus oversight funding for certain agencies, establishing a fiscal stabilization account appropriating money.
First reading, and the bill is going to be referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with Senate File 1938, now on general orders. First reading.
President, members, tomorrow we'll take up more general orders starting at 11 o'clock, and hopefully we'll have the messages back from the House on the last several conference committees, human services, taxes, and
state government,
transportation. So that'll be tomorrow's work, so I would presume we'll be here from 11 till 2 or 3. And if you have a general orders bill that you would like heard tomorrow, please let my office know, and we'll see if we can accommodate that. So I would move the Senate adjourn till Wednesday, April 29th, 11 a.m.
On that motion, All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned until Wednesday, April 29th at 11 a.m.